When I was a kid, Lord, used my grandfather to shape a lot of my my opinions and my understandings. But with that being said, I'm not so foolish as to also understand that a lot of my grandfather's opinions was just that, those opinions and preferences. Not that they were wrong or that they were right, but that's that. That experience through life had taught him certain things. And I know that that those that are wise make them same observations, and they weigh them with great, not reverence, but they should weigh them with great respect. That an elderly man, that he kind of made the joke about the man talking about we're coming up on New Year's, that he'd seen hundreds of them. Well, you know, obviously that was just a joke, but we know that with experience comes, or should come, a wisdom, and that when my father or my grandfather or the elders in my family particularly give me counsel, we would hope that it's wise counsel. And we know that there are as foolish old people as well, but even then, their counsel should be, if not heeded, because its foolishness should be considered, simply because of the age that they have, and that it's not a small thing, as it were, to go against an elderly man's counsel. That we can take a lot of scripture and we can see if these things are true. And I remember my grandfather, if he mentioned it once in my life, he probably mentioned it dozens of times about an example of where people had gathered around the altar and that a man had prayed that the Lord would make him humble. How many of you do you remember? My grandfather, maybe that don't stand out in your mind. And my grandfather said he would shudder to think that because the Bible tells us that we are to humble ourselves. And my grandfather's counsel was, as he was speaking, was that that we should humble ourselves, because when God humbles us, He might take our wife, He might take our children, He might take our possessions, and that is not something that we should want. But you know, when I would think and I hear about that, the understanding I walked away from that is that Darrell should not only should Darrell be humble, but Darrell should not be a man of pride. Because if Darrell is a man of pride and he has not the ability to humble himself, and he comes before the Lord and he would ask that thing, because see, the Lord tells us that we are to humble ourselves. And if Darrell can't do it within himself, then Darrell's going to have to reach out and he's going to ask God, and we know what God does in certain instances to humble people. So that being said, that was what you might call a pet peeve of my grandfather's. That when anybody said, Lord, make me humble, it brought unto him a man that I would have to say was a humble man. It made him shudder because he had an understanding, or he seen God in a certain light that maybe somebody else hadn't. And to think about standing before the Lord and the Lord humbling you, it's a fearful thing. So then, if we could but for a moment preach tonight, I'm going to preach this message from standing here, looking out through these eyes. Oh, I'm not an old man, although I'm older than some, that we might be able to declare God's truth with clarity, because God is such a wonderful God that we can stand and expound on one of His attributes for hundreds of years, like the old man said, and yet not scratch the surface. We were talking about it in Sunday school. We come to church this morning, and we thought we'd preach on something else, but we begin just for a little bit, begin to try to understand who God is, and how Darrell come to that understanding.
Amen. We can begin to read in Genesis, the first chapter, and then following the several chapters thereafter, and see that God is a holy God. But because sin come into the world, we, if God was simply holy, we would have no knowledge of Him. Or if the knowledge that we would have to be in Genesis 1:1. Because He longed to have a relationship with Adam and Eve. But when sin come into the garden, and Adam and Eve was cast garden, because if God was simply holy, we would have had to part ways of God and mankind. Think about it now, just for a minute, that God is a God that is so righteous, so holy, and so pure, that He can't stand in the presence of sin. If God was more than just holy, and was a righteous and a just God, we would have to say as well that today not only would we be ignorant of Him because of His holiness, but that we would not exist, but because we look through a window of mercy, we can know God. And when we look at His holiness, it is through a window of mercy. When we look at His justice, when we look at His righteousness, it is through a window of mercy. And we cannot begin to fully comprehend who He is without acknowledging His wonderful mercy, that He made a way for Adam and Eve when sin was cast into the when sin was coming to the garden, that He had made a way, because He is not a just God, though He is, but He made that way because He was merciful. He made that way so that me and you, I can have a relationship with Him, because He is merciful. But because not only is He merciful, He is just. There was a way that needed to be made. That God, I was thinking about that. These three attributes of the Lord, being holy, just, and merciful. And beginning to think about that He was holy way back there in Genesis, just like He is today. We cannot say at any point in time that God was less holy than He ever has been. That we cannot say at any point in time that God was less just than He was a million years ago and that He is today. But when we look at the attribute of mercy, we can see that yes, God is merciful. The Bible says, if you want to turn there, in the 119th Psalm, that He makes, He points it out at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. The Bible says, oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for He is good, because His mercy endureth forever. Let Israel now say that His mercy endureth forever. Let the house of Aaron now say that His mercy endureth forever. Let them now that fear the Lord say that His mercy endureth forever. I call upon the Lord in distress, and the Lord answered me and set me in a large place. And then we can jump down to the 29th verse, and it says, oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endureth forever. So to hear and read that verse, we would have to say then, is it possible to say, as it is an impossibility to say that God is less holy, or to say that God is less just? Could it be said that there'll come a point in time time that God is less merciful. That these attributes of God are the eternal. And we find out in the 118th Psalm that God's mercy endured forever. But His relationship with mankind between us and God, though we could say God is holy, God is just, God is righteous, we only have knowledge of that because God is also merciful. Will there come a point in time where that door of mercy shall be closed? Because when we look at the Lord and we study Him as it were through a window of mercy, it would do us well to step back and to look at that window. Stepping back, we'll see that it's not a window at all, but that it's a door. We'll see that it was a door placed there. There's a lot of people, mind you, that say God is not righteous and God is not holy. But it's because they look not through that door of mercy. They look through the smoke and the fog to see it. But thanks be to God, I see Him for who He is. Because I look through that door of mercy. We live in a world today that people want to proclaim that God is a merciful God. And in saying so, they want to excuse sin. They want to make allowances for the downfall of man. But let us not go in the opposite direction. But let us understand that we see God for who He is through that window. That is not a window, but a door. Let us be as the Puritans, for that was something they understood. The Puritan writers, there was a revival that broke out in the Church of England. And you can repeat their writings. There was no other generation that could expound on who God was. And they did it because they seen Him and looked at Him through that door of mercy. And it'll make you tremble, because we can only see Him through that door for who He is. We can see that He is a holy God, that He's a righteous God. But His interaction with mankind throughout the ages can only be described in this one word, merciful. That when we see Him in Isaiah, I believe it's the 65th chapter. Paul speaks about it in Romans in the 10th chapter. And it would do us well to read both verses. But when we turn there, we can see that it's that he declares in the 65th chapter of Isaiah. We get a picture in just a few verses that God is merciful. That He wasn't only merciful to the children of Israel, but that He is sure that He will show mercy to whom He will show mercy, and whom He will, He hardeneth. But here we find that He begins to speak about the Gentiles being called. This is the verse, the passages that Paul quotes in the 10th chapter of Romans. But then it goes on, and it not only tells us, though it does not speak and truly say that God is merciful, we see that He is, and then it goes on to speak of His judgment. And I'm thankful that I have been blessed to be able to stand in that door of mercy and see God clearly. But the Bible teaches me that there is coming a time when that door of mercy will close, and no one cannot say God is not merciful anymore. The Bible declares that His mercy is guarded forever and ever. And us that are born again, when we gather around the throne of God, and He transfigures this into something fit to dwell in His presence for all eternity. When we're there a million years, we'll be there because God is merciful. Not because He's just so He is, not because He is merciful, or rather holy, but because He's merciful. And you can just play along a little bit. We would say that He changed the laws of physics, not that in changing Himself into being a merciful God, but He changed the laws of physics and bestowed mercy upon mankind so that I might stand before Him, one that is fallen, one that is wretched, one that is wicked. The Bible says there is none righteous, no, not one. Who's He talking about? He's talking about me, and He's talking about you. But sometimes we look at Him so intently that we fail to see the door in which He gazed through. You know, we need to instill in our children. Have you ever seen kids? I've got a few, and some of them are different than others. But we find it interesting that it's the one that's always the tormentor that seems to be the quickest to run and to plead his case when he is tormented by another. That's just the nature of mankind. How many times our children don't say so much, but they said it enough that life, that it's not fair. And what do we have? How do we respond? We say, life's not fair. But I don't want him to walk away. Because, see, Daryl needs to maybe be a little bit more clear. Because when man says life is not fair, what he in essence is saying, for the most part, is give me justice. Because he has a warped and twisted understanding of what is rightfully his. He wouldn't know, he would not say, well, not justice, but give me what is what is owed me. Give me what I deserve. And so we say, well, life is not fair. So a kid walks away sometimes with the understanding that life will not give you what you deserve. But not understanding that it's not because life is unfair, but it's because God is merciful. For one that would say, give me what is mine, that's to say, give me damnation. Give me utter torment and the pits of hell. And that's what needs to be maybe expressed a little clearer to all. That life is not fair because God is a merciful God. Not because that's just the way things are. And sometimes you don't get what you deserve. Because there's a lot of people that would tell their kids that very thing. Life is not fair, honey. Sometimes you just don't get what's deserved or what's owed you without expressing that what is owed us is a debt that we could not pay. Now sometimes we will even communicate to our children, here's a gift. You earned it. But sometimes it would do us well to give a gift and express to them that it's not because they earned it, but it's because I'm merciful, so that they might take that throughout their life as well and see that these things get a clearer picture of who the Lord is. We're going to tell this story at the expense of our son, but we're doing it tonight. I told my son a long time ago, when 10 years old seemed to be so far away, that he could have a pocket knife when he's 10 years old. Well, you know, the Missouri State Trappers Convention had a camp out there in Salem, Missouri, and But unfortunately, there's a lot of kids that don't want nothing to do with outside. If it ain't got buttons and don't go bleep and blop and bing and bang and on the television, they don't want no parts of it. So our children, me and Ron's, weren't the only ones there. We could say that they were a minority, that they were few there. And there's old men. And we live in a culture today that truly is sad. We've said it 100 times. We said it once years ago that parents had many children, and today children have many parents, and unfortunately so many of them parents don't want nothing to do with their kids. Why? Because their kids have an understanding that life's not fair. I don't get what's owed to me, and people run around trying to give them what they think's rightfully theirs, and their kid thinks the universe revolves around them. But we were there, and you'd see elderly men or men my age, and older, and their children are absent. I don't know. It was no doubt that a lot of it was due to broken marriages. It weren't their weekend to have the kids or whatever. But our children was walking through there, and Levi had a little bit of money in his pocket. And when you go to those things, you better be careful, or you'll leave without your shirt. Because there's some wheelers and dealers, they call them tailgaters. And they come and they sell things on their tailgate. And there was one that told Levi in particular. He seen him looking over the trash. And he said, "See that in there? I'll sell that to you for $2. Now listen to me, son. If your father wants it, it'd be $4.50. But I'll sell it to you for $2. Now that's a salesman, isn't it not? To make him think he was getting a whale of a deal, a lot better deal than his father could get. And no doubt the man was genuine, because he wanted to see a young boy enjoy the things that he enjoyed as a child. They walked through there, and it was kind of funny, because before it was over with, I don't know if it's the same man, but there were some that he gave them steel traps. Here, you can have that. He has it for sale. He says, "Here, you can have that." And my boys are standing over at another table. And the man across the way seen them boys. They clean cut. They were freshly shaven around the sides. And he looked at them and he was a man. That wasn't so. But he seen them and he looked on his table. And he had those little old cheap Chinese made pocket knives. I think they sell for $1. And he picked up 2 of them. And he walked over there. And he gave them to my boys. And he says, "Here you go. And now don't cut yourself with them." And I guess it would be possible to cut yourself with them knives. But you'd really have to press hard. But anyhow, my boys were ecstatic. Riley had got a pocket knife before he was 10 years old. And he come. And Levi was looking forward to the day that Riley could have a pocket knife. Because Levi ain't 10 years old. Once his brother turns 10, well, then I can borrow it. I don't know how kids think. But he was so excited himself. Because though Riley was just 2 months away from getting his pocket knife, Levi was more than a year into a year. A kid or 2 years. Seems like an eternity. And there he had one too. And they were so happy. And Riley, I think, made the comment, "I got one." And I said, "Well, I guess so. But now, since you have one, I reckon you don't need one when you turn 10. And I seen the disappointment in his face, because I can't reach in my pocket tonight, Riley. I'll show him what kind of life I'd give you, because I've already given it to you, ain't I, honey?" But yeah, so he went through his 10th birthday, and he understood that he had his pocket knife. Not a case, not made in the United States of America by skilled craftsmen, but a little old cheap pocket knife in China. And so he didn't get one on his 10th birthday. I thought, well, this is probably best. Because you know how kids can be. You know how boys. Well, I won't have devices and possessions and don't understand that they come with responsibility. So Christmas was coming up and I thought, well, I'll go ahead and I'll give him a pocket knife because after all, I was struggling and couldn't decide which to do. To give him a pocket knife or to give him a knife in a sheath like I got for my first knife. Though it wasn't my first knife, it was my first knife given to me by my father as a gift. And we struggled with it and know what to do. And me being a procrastinator, I just put it off. You say, Daryl, what's it matter? He'd be happy with anything. It would even have to be one like you would want. But see, that is the secret of giving a gift. Have you ever heard it's better to give than to receive? Well, that's only true if you give them your heart and if you give something that you would want to receive. See, this is the beauty of what God gave me and you when he sent his only begotten son. He gave us something not only that he had but that he would think anybody would want to have because it was a part of him. When he gave Jesus Christ, he enabled me through his abundant mercy to be able to stand in his presence. But it's better than that. He made a way that the God of the universe might dwell in my heart, might walk with me, might comfort me, Cassie, when I'm alone, when I'm scared. What a wonderful God I serve. A pleasant for the name. And I know him. And I've been able to experience it because of his mercy. Well, we went to the knife store. And I want to tell you a little bit about knives. I'm a machinist. And I know a little bit about steel. And I tinkered around a little bit. Making their work. We make knives for dice. And there's certain steel that'll hold up better than others. There is certain steel you can get that'll you can make just as sharp as this other steel. But it won't hold its edge. Or it'll hold its edge. But it'll be much harder to sharpen. And I understand that the case manufacturers knew and understood that people wanted to pull a shiny knife out of their pocket. That they don't want to maintain it. That's why there's so many sealed bearings on pieces of equipment anymore. Not because they're better than grease bearings, but they're better than grease bearings that don't get greased. And so it is with these stainless steel knives and cases with. And that's where, oh, they're pretty knives. That's what they've done. Almost all their knives are made out of stainless steel. I think they call it chrome vanadium. It's what they call their carbon steel blades. Used to be everything that was a case knife at one time was made from them carbon steel blades. But you've got to maintain them. You can't just leave them in your pocket and never oil them. Or when you're cutting strands of hay or whatever outside, when you get back in the house, you better get them out. You better oil them. From ever so often, you're going to have to scotch brine them if you want them to be shiny. But you know what? They just hold an edge so good. And I guess maybe because they argue with you that their stainless knives will hold an edge just as good. And for the sake of the argument, that might be so. But one thing I know, it's a whole lot easier to put an edge on a carbon steel blade. And what good is a knife if it won't be sharp enough to shave you? So we went, and we already discovered, and I'm a man that was born out of my time, I reckon. I look at all, from the trade I'm in to the things I enjoy doing in my spare time, it's always like I was born too late. And the only good thing about me being born when I was is I was able to marry a woman 9 years younger than me. And if I'd have been a whole lot older, well, then I'd have just had to say she's a pretty girl and me an old man. But you know, so the Lord in His wisdom, He knows what He's doing. But anyhow, I see every year in the catalog that they're making fewer and fewer knives out of that carbon steel. I might have bought a fixed knife if I'd have got one that case made out of carbon steel, but they're all stainless. And I thought that I know myself, if I wanted any knife that they made, it'd be the one I had in my pocket. So I went to the case store, and that had settled it all. And I went to the case store to buy my son a knife, just like I had. I'd been there a week ago, and I'd seen it. I'd put it in my hand, but we come back. We didn't have the money then, and we come back that very next week. And when we went there, I said, I want a muskrat, because that's the style of knife, and carbon steel, a mini muskrat, a full-size muskrat don't fit in my pocket as good, and a tiny muskrat's so small you can't use it for skinning. Them mini muskrats, a case made. Now I tell you what, now that's a knife that'll fit in your pocket. You can take it anywhere you go. But anyway, so I went and I asked, I want a mini muskrat in carbon steel. And he said, they're back ordered. I said, what? He said, they're back ordered. I said, well, do you have one? Do you have one? Just a regular one. He said, yes, I do. And I got it out and I looked at it. But you know what? Me being 6 foot, but that knife, though it's just a little bit bigger, just don't fit my pocket as good. I don't know if my sons will outgrow me. But if they do, it'll be a while. Although it'll seem like a moment of when I look them out of eye. But I thought, well, I could give them a mini, and I knew it wouldn't fit in their pocket just right. But see, they don't have to carry change and car keys neither. So I'm thinking it'd be all right. But they didn't have any. Well, I left the store, and I was somewhat sad. Oh, what am I going to do? But the very knife that I wanted to give my son was a knife just like mine. Just a few days later, or early, and my wife told my son, who's 10 years old, who understands English, who is very good at reading and writing. His comprehension at reading is as good as any kid, no doubt better than some. And anyhow, she would give him a specific command to do. Because he had his head all up in the air, he'd go and he'd halfway do it. In this period of a week, I hand him some mail, I think it was, and told him to lay it on the table, and he put it in the trash. And I thought, is this a boy? Is this a boy that deserves a knife? Is this a boy that can accept the responsibilities of having something that not only he could hurt himself with, but he could hurt his brother? He could leave it out. And his little brother did it. His sisters. And they could hurt themselves to the point of death. Or even yet, they could be scarred. There's a fella I know that cut himself and his fingers like his. He cut the tendon in it. I think they tried to fix it. But you know what? The rest of his life, he carries around a crooked finger because he cut it.
Is my son old enough to accept the responsibilities? And the answer was obviously no. But on Sunday morning, after all the presents was given, my son had a father that told him to come here. And I reached into my pocket and I pulled out my knife to take watched me skin possums and coyotes and deer. See, it's broke in. I showed Danny how to skin that fox, and I used my knife. I tell you what, it fits in your hand. You can use a trapper. You can use a old timer in a knife. And I tell you what, it won't fit in your hand like that mini muskrat. And I began to cut around that coyote or on that fox that they had trapped. They brought it over and wanted me to show them how to skin it out. And I pulled that knife out. I began to make them open cuts, and I said, all right, now you do it, Danny. Oh, and y'all have seen Danny. I'm not belittling, because see, he's not practiced either, but I've done a little bit more than him. He kept on slipping out. He kept on... then I told him, I says, it's all right. I said, it's all right to run that knife a little bit deep. Well, he runs to the bone. After I said, Dad, well, you know, you don't want to run it that deep. But you know, in my hands, it looked almost like that knife was trained. I don't know how little boys think. And when I reached in that pocket and I handed him that knife, wasn't because he deserved it. Wasn't because, Riley, you showed me that you were exceptionally responsible. Was it because you're my son, and that alone, that you come from me and my mama, that you got that knife? But it was because it was an act of mercy. It was because I'd been there, and I knew that some things, that when we receive them, that some things we receive not because we deserve them, and not because we have earned them, but because we have a merciful Father. Now listen to me. And because He is merciful, we receive things and have to accept responsibilities that we sometimes are not ready to receive, and yet He's merciful. I'm thankful that when I look at the Lord, that it is not through a window of mercy. Oh, but that I see Him through a door of mercy, and that He opened to me and you. He wants every one of us to come in. He wants every one of us to see that He's holy and that He is just. But I don't want ever, just for academic purposes, I look from afar off and say, we serve a just God, and that we should come to Him and seek justice. Because this is the frightening thing about God's holiness and His justice. That when we read about it in God's Word, as we could, in the 65th chapter of Isaiah, it says, I am sought of them that asked not for me. I am found of them that sought me not. I said, behold me, to a nation that was not called by my name. Now if that ain't mercy to the Gentiles, I don't know what it is. Then he goes on. I begin to expound how merciful He is to the children of Israel. And He said, I've spread out my hands all the day unto a rebellious people, which walketh in a way that is not good after their own thoughts. A people that provoketh me to anger continually to my face, that sacrificeth in gardens and burneth incense unto altars of bricks, which
remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments which eat swine's flesh and broth of abominable things in their vessels, which say, stand by thyself, come not near to me, for I'm holier than thou. There are these are a smoke in my nostrils, a fire that burneth all the day. Behold, it is written before me, I will not keep silence, but will recompense, even recompense unto their bosom your iniquities and the iniquities of your fathers together, saith the Lord, which have burned incense unto the mountains and blasphemed me unto the hill, upon the hills. Therefore I will measure their former work into their bosom. But even in God's judgment, we see that He is merciful. Listen to me. Even when we begin to understand the justice and the righteousness and the holiness of God, it is through a door of mercy. But there is coming a time, the Bible tells me, that He will be seen through a door of wrath. When that door of mercy is closed and our mind cannot comprehend, I can stand up here and preach for a week on the justice of God and what He's going to do to the sinner. But it is still even yet through eyes of mercy, through a door as it were. But when it is closed, it causes me to shudder at the thoughts of a just God. Surely His mercy endureth forever. No doubt that will be proclaimed throughout the ages around the throne of God. But the Bible also says, it is appointed unto man to die, and after this, the judgment. Unfortunately, today, there's those, and this is what really perturbs me, there are those that say God is not holy. And there are those that say that God is not just. And it's because they refuse to look through that door of mercy. And sometimes we can explain away to them the fall of sin. We can explain away to them that of the tragedies of that so many times are blamed on God. They first declare that God can do nothing, and then they blame Him for all the evil in this world. And and we can explain away those things, if, as it were, the smoke and the fog of sin. But if we fail to point out that we see Him through a door of mercy, the sinner as well sees Him through a door of mercy. You say, well, Darrell, I thought you said earlier that they see through a fog and a haze of sin. I would liken it unto this. Have you ever been in there in a place anymore? Seems like that every place is a smoke-free place. But I can remember growing up that there's some restaurants. There's one in particular still here in town. They just serve breakfast. But there is so much cigarette smoke in the air that when we used to get biscuits and gravy on Saturdays when we worked there, where I work, that when you brought it in, they pulled it out of the bags, that your styrofoam plate smelled like cigarette smoke. And that when you walk into that store, I don't know how many guys
would go and pick up the order, biscuits and gravy. And that they said there was just a haze. About you could see the line from all the smoke, from all the smokers in there. Everyone's smoking. You know, if you stood at that door and you looked outside, it was clear. But you know, if you was at the back wall of that store, that as you looked out that door, you were looking through the smoke. You were looking through the exhaust of all the people that was breathing out that cigarette smoke. And there was no way that you could see clearly through that door. And yet, if you was to see the outside, it would be through that haze. We live in a world that truly believes, and because of our own conditioning, Christian parents are as guilty as the rest of the world. We condition the children to think that the world revolves around them. And we just bend over backwards anymore to try to please little children. And so little children have the understanding. You know, that's a good thing to do to a certain extent. When you have a little baby, and the only way it can communicate to you that it's hungry or that it's wet is to cry. And we meet the needs of that little child because it can't communicate to us. But you go to Walmart, there's kids 8 and 9 years old still trying to communicate to their parents. They're getting in the floor and crying. And they still cater to. So why wouldn't they think the world revolves around them? And they cannot comprehend the holiness of God and the justice of God and His righteousness. And they don't begin to understand the mercy of God. To fully comprehend the mercy of God, we got to see what's rightfully ours. But in doing so, it is through His mercy. We can look at a man that's... I've heard people say before when somebody died early, oh, he died before his time. Why did the Lord take him when he had little children or whatever, instead of declaring that the Lord was merciful? There's bad things that happen in this world. But if you read the Bible from cover to cover, you'll have an understanding. And if you look at your life, you'll have to truly say that God's interaction with man can only be summed up in one word: merciful. But if you think because He's merciful, see, that's what happened to the Puritans. There was a great revival. And they looked at God through a door of mercy. And they were blessed by it and seeing the holiness and the righteousness of God. And that it just caused them to rejoice in better understanding His mercy because they seen what was rightfully ours. But you know, if you lose sight, if you just step back and you describe the door case, you're not describing God. But you're describing the door. And how foolish would it be for any of us to go to a museum where they have, I've never done it, but I've heard there's art museums where they have art. And you go there, and there's people that are considered to be, I guess, professors and experts, that they go and they will look at that piece of art, and they will read into it so much that I just see a picture. I see a picture maybe of a bunch of Englishmen chasing foxes with their foxhounds. Oh, but they'll see so much more. They'll see that the man that painted it, that he was somewhat depressed the day he painted it because of how the shadows were. Or you can see that he's in a good mood. Look how the lights, this and that. And they'll go on and on to the finest detail. But how foolish would it be for me if you asked me, Daryl, what'd you go see at that art museum? And I begin to explain to the greatest detail the frame of that picture. A frame that no doubt wasn't even on there.
when the man sold it as payments. Probably been framed several times in the 100 years or so that it'd been painted. And to explain it to the minorest detail. But Darrell, boy, that sounds like a beautiful frame. But what was it around? Oh, I paid no mind. I was just so enwrapped in the door frame. Or the picture frame. We have a lot of people today that's doing that when they look at God. To their own laws. But I'm thankful that each and every one of us, that when we begin to talk about the Lord, that I know that some are careful and hesitant sometimes to speak about certain attributes of God because people have twisted them in such a way. You want to get an argument on your hands, just talk to people at work and tell them that God's holy. And I'll tell you what, get fighting mad. And why is that? Because somebody has not explained to them that we must see Him through that door of mercy. Let's get some song to sing. Have you ever received something you did not deserve? We spoke about Riley getting a pocket knife for Christmas. But listen, if you're born again, you've received something you didn't deserve. If you have your health tonight, you've got something you don't deserve. If you got shirt on your back and shoes on your feet, you've received something that you've not deserved. If you've got breath in your lungs and blood in your veins, you've got something you did not deserve. And the only reason that we have anything that is good is because of the mercy of God. I'm thankful that He longed to have a relationship with me. I could stand before Him after I lived my whole life. Stood before Him as my judge. If He was but holy, as He was in Genesis 1, and looked at Him and say, My, I've never seen something as holy as God. I could have stand before Him and seen Him in His justice and in His righteousness as He sets forth the sentence that I have to say amen to. But because He is merciful, I get to dwell with Him for all eternity. I don't understand that. Don't understand a God that had everything. Just everything. Why He would want to have a relationship with me? Why? And to this even point in day, you know, a lot of people, they look at, because of justice, Jesus Christ had to come and had to die. It's cut and dry as that. And then when they say, oh, but let us speak of mercy, they say, because God was a merciful God. He sent His only begotten Son. But I'm telling you that we can look around us this very moment and we can see the mercies of God. To see that He made a way that I could stand before Him, that He could look me in the face. Now the Bible declares to us, we can see it in the Old Testament, that God was such a righteous God that He could not be in the presence of wickedness, but yet He would save a wicked man, that He would send His Holy Son, that He would come and die in my stead, and then save one that was wretched and was hateful, was any negative comment you could make, that's me, and that He saved me there on Calvary. But yet, even yesterday, when I was there out on the farm and I had an evil fall, the Lord chose not to destroy me. Why? Because of His mercy. And He spoke to my heart, and I repented. Glory be to God. I'm glad that my Lord is who He is. But the Bible tells me
that the door of mercy will not always be open. It's something special, something so special that we don't fully understand it at times. And our children and the churches today are standing empty because people don't understand just how merciful He is. And when they begin to see it, it'll be too late, because they'll be looking through a door of wrath.